sound man? 3, 2, 1.
Yo, baby, huff some oil. It's time for baby oil.
Baby oil and blow. Damn, I was so close. Baby.
Yeah, you're trying to get that Triple H.
Yeah, no, baby oil and blow. No, I was right.
Trying to get Triple H excited, right?
One of these days, yeah. I'm going
to
learn.
He happens to listen to this and he's like, well, he does. I like how this is starting.
I can call him Paul. You call him H. He listens to this show. Big fan. He and Steph.
Wait, Big Show listens too?
Big Show listens too. Paul and Steph lift weights in their basement at midnight with their oversized dog while
I see that Big Show, been looking at their Instagram.
Big Show sits down there and says words of encouragement and they listen to Baby Oil and Blow.
Steph's been pushing the sled a lot lately. I think she's training for a big Mania match.
Is that a euphemism?
I don't want to talk out of turn.
Is that a euphemism?
It's just, all the kids are doing
pushing
it
the, pushing the sled?
The big thing at the gym.
She's pushing the sled.
She's trying to be young.
We can introduce ourselves. It's me. It's big time. Matt O with me as always. Oh, you're going to get to be Cougar J to my Tommy Angel this week.
Oh, hoy hoy to that. Yeah. That's big the two Adams. Coolest ring names ever.
Natonio.
Back
Adams
at us.
Is that's the real name.
Makes me sound a lot more swarthy than I am. I'll take it.
Let me drink a little bit of this beer here.
What kind of beer do we have today? We got some sponsorships going.
Oh, that's bitter. This is from the fine folks at Devil's Trumpet in Maryville, Indiana. Space Caravan IPA. Not for the faint of heart.
Next time you're feeling like getting a little bit out there, huh?
That's got balls, baby.
Space Caravan. Today, he's Devil's Trumpet.
Yeah, it's an IPA.
They're funding that rundown.
It's fun. They're funding the rundown?
They're offsetting that, offsetting Stifler. And, you know, just taking a little bit of the heat off of him.
Before we do the rundown, can I tell you a few thoughts?
Sure.
Just on the week.
It depends
on
about what.
First of all, that
you're talking about those Russian indictments? Is that what you're going to get into?
No, those got settled out of court. There's the Tide Pod Challenge.
I've seen a lot of headlines about kids trying to eat Tide Pods.
Okay.
Is this something different?
Yeah. Apparently that's a thing of the past.
Uh-huh. I got a big jug of Tide Pods back in the laundry room if we want to go grab them.
Yeah, later.
It's like, we're going to do one of those shock jock, like on-air things that like, you know, Turd and Mankow would do back in the mid-90s.
I'm a little hardcore, a little more hardcore. I bang Rails of Comet instead.
Okay, that makes a lot of
sense.
You
want to get in on that.
I just like to rub it on my gum line.
There you go. Apparently,
takes the edge off.
G or F lister Black China. Are you familiar?
No.
She's like a stripper and then I think was banging the male Kardashian. She's aligned herself with rappers.
And does she look like
and she gets herself
wrestler China, but a black, one of the blacks?
Unfortunately, no. One of the blacks. No. She just looks like a stripper from Atlanta.
Okay. But her name's Black China.
Either way,
That's cool.
She had a sex tape drop.
It's Hotlanta, by the way.
Yeah, Hotlanta. She had a sex...
Wait, a sex tape dropped and I don't know about it?
Well, here's the big deal about it.
No, we gotta pause this
thing.
No,
here's the real big deal. Apparently, kids are hitting Twitter with the blowjob challenge.
That's different from the Tide Pod challenge.
So apparently, high school kids, they're giving up eating chemicals and they're just getting back...
Next step?
To just... Getting nasty. Freak nasty.
Okay, so is this similar to all of those news reports in the early 2000s about the girls that were wearing like the bracelets, and if you ripped off their bracelets, they had to do. I love these like every 10 years or so, just like terrorize parents in the Midwest stories that come out of like what teenagers are doing because like one teenager did it somewhere.
I think you're just, it's just
come on, there were sex bands. I know all about it.
Yeah, but I think this just means we're going
to
get
to ask my teenage employees about it. So these sex bands, is that really a thing?
How many of those sex
those
bands
bracelets
you
got on sex bands?
You can tell me. I'm like the cool uncle.
What do you think you're trying to pull here?
Yeah.
I don't want you involved in this whole sex band ring.
I'm guessing what this means is we're just going to get inundated with even more amateur blowjob vids
okay,
on
the
internet.
Okay, so this has got something to do with Blac Chyna's sex tape. This isn't all linking up in my head yet.
I guess, I don't know. I'm just, it's
what's the blowjob challenge?
Big headline.
It's just like,
I don't have all the details yet. I just want to be the first to talk
about
it.
I dare you to give me a blowjob because if that's as easy it is,
and then some
like,
scumbag
kids finally cracked that code, and that's working for kids these days.
Well, I think,
jeez.
Yeah, I think it's like you're an 18-year-old boy, and you're like, hey, you want to prove you're really good?
Yeah.
Just I'll videotape this. We'll put this on the internet.
Wow.
You know, you real deal or not?
Girls, don't fall for that. You don't want to be giving these teenagers blowjobs.
No.
They're scumbags.
But the other big news.
Have a mind of your own.
Related to the world of wrestling.
Okay.
Double J, man. He's going in.
Jeff Jarrett is going. Yeah. Is he indicted? That whole cash for gold scam thing fell apart?
And he got indicted into the WWE Hall of Fame.
Oh, man.
That's the word, right?
Funneling his gold money through Deutsche Bank. Turns out he owes a lot to those Russians. It's all tied together.
All of it. It's all tied in.
That's impressive.
What do you think about that, man? Your guy, Double J.
My number one concern is the Hall of Fame presentation. They're putting Jeff Jarrett in.
Yeah.
Like, a little offshoot before I get there. Who's going to induct him?
Oh, man. Owen Hart.
I think it should be Kurt.
You think it's Kurt?
I think it's got to be like, you stole my wife. You're a legend.
You son of a bitch.
She made you an Alky just like she made me an Alky.
Yeah.
We've lived this together.
Way to complete
number
that
two,
WWE rehab.
We got this new management over there at Impact Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, I'm reading these headlines. I keep up with the headlines. I don't watch the wrestling anymore, but I'm keeping up with the headlines. Scott D'Amore
is it worse?
Cyrus the Virus. They're in charge over there at Anthem.
Is it worse that we follow wrestling through reading it?
Rather than actually watching it?
Yeah.
No, because it takes much less time out of the day. So it's better. It's quite better.
I'm going to keep feeling good about myself.
But I've been reading about what they're doing.
Yeah,
they've
got the new,
policies where they're letting people own their own characters.
That's smart.
They signed all that shit back to Matt Hardy, all the dumb shit he was doing that everybody liked because of this meme culture internet dumb shit.
Yep.
So, are they going to cut a deal with the WWF to let them license some footage of MMA Double J, the greatest thing Jeff Jarrett did in his wrestling career?
Obviously, the word has traveled real fast of my newfound love of MMA. And, I hope you guys, you'll never reach my level, but you're starting young, and you could aspire to come close to my level. We're not going to be doing any karate today. We're going to be talking more submissions, more along the lines of what I've perfected, what Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle have attempted for their entire life. To gain the knowledge that I've quite frankly mastered in a matter of weeks. First things first, I need to find out where you're at, where your skill level at. What have you perfected, what have you not perfected? Who knows a move, whether it be a rear neck or choke, arm bar?
Yes, I know the ankle lock.
Oh, little guy. So you know the ankle lock, huh? What, do you know who perfected it?
Kurt Angle.
No, it's not Kurt Angle. He ripped it off. Ken Shamrock made it famous, but I perfected it. Well, why don't you put it on me? Why don't you put it on me? See what you got. See what you got. Is that all you got? Is that a strong? What a wimp you are. Can you not twist any harder than that? Is that all you got? Harder. Get out of here. Let me show you how this is done. Come here, kid. I could break this ankle in two if I had to. Come here. Get over here. Quit moving. Can you feel it? Well, tap if you can feel it. I don't think it hurts bad enough. I literally perfected this in weeks. This is an arm bar, little lady. Can you feel it?
Yeah.
Can you feel it?
Yes.
I perfected this move in 2 days. Tap that mat. This is a leg bar, kid. Can you feel that pain?
Ow.
Huh? Happy Thanksgiving, kids. You got an awful lot to work on. An awful lot to work on.
Yeah, that kind of brings me to my next question.
I want
for
that
you.
Video to be like 50% like him putting random women in figure fours when he's doing his wife beater gimmick in WWF, and the other half just to be that MMA double J shit, him putting leg locks and ankle holds on little children.
I was just going to ask you, I don't know if they still do it.
Maybe throwing a few slap nuts.
In the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah?
Just hold on a second. Don't piss me off.
That's right. Don't piss me off.
He was getting that over as a big catchphrase.
You know what pisses me off? World hunger. Holy wars. Politics. Mm-hmm. Ugly women in politics.
Madeline Albright.
Janet Reno.
Pigs.
You know what else pisses me off? Women with semen-stained dresses.
Monica Lewinsky.
Semen-stained dresses.
Poor pigs.
That really pisses me off. Hillary Clinton. Stand by your man. You really pisses me off.
Everybody was chanting it along in the crowds. It was like wildfire, everybody on board of that don't piss me off.
I'm going to have to bing it in the commercial break.
It's a legendary career there, Jeff Jarrett.
They had the WWF toys at the time. And they couldn't, for whatever
merchandising reason.
They couldn't, for whatever reason, put don't piss me off on his shirt, even though what his shirt said. So it said something like stupid, like don't make me mad.
Don't pass me by.
Yeah, don't pass me by. Anyways, in Major League Baseball, when you go into the Hall of Fame, if you played for like multiple teams, I think they have it where like, or it used to be at least, like the team could pay you money to be like, hey, I know you were only on our team for a year, but be wearing our hat because you get a bust in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. So like my question to you is, if you had like a bust in the WWE Hall of Fame,
what era Jarrett, physical Hall of Fame?
Yeah, what era Jarrett?
Tampa Bay, Florida. I think that's where you would put pro wrestling Hall of Fame
next
if you needed to put one.
Hulk Hogan's Pasta Mania.
If I was going to pick an era,
is MMA Jarrett?
You know
the bust
that
you're getting?
Vince, what Vince wants is fluffy haired, light up hat, just like when he's putting the most money into him.
Sure, but it's not what Vince runs.
I don't think that's what people think of him the most when they look back. And I think you got to do tears in his eyes, crying after Owen Hart died, Jeff Jarrett.
Wow.
Him and Deborah cut that promo.
I didn't see this coming.
Yeah, that's
not in a million
years.
That's
when he's most relatable. He's supposed to have that big tag team match or something. They were in a tag team at the time.
Yeah, they were.
He was the first person we got just like crying because, you know, a tragedy had just happened. And it was, you know, other than the desperation in his eyes that you saw in the footage of those Global Force wrestling tapes, his last grasp at trying to do something in the business, I feel like that's when he was the most real. That's when I felt the most connected to him as a human.
See, I want shooting glasses, slap nuts,
WCW,
carrying a guitar.
WCW
World
early 2000s,
champ.
Like a
WCW World
black
champ.
And silver NWO, like 4.0 era.
Yeah, not him trying to connect with the fans and be real, but him just being like, well, I'm champ because I should be, right,
I've
guys?
Got all the stroke around here is what he was saying a lot. I like that.
Yeah, so.
You got all the stroke around. I think that's
agree
probably
disagree, I guess.
When he was in the eyes of the fans.
Top of the game?
Yeah, like the most legitimate as a performer. After that, you get the whole I'm trying to push myself as the main guy and TNA shit. Nobody liked that.
I'm going to say it. H is behind this inducting Jarrett in because H's whole like 2000 run.
You think he just respects
was just a ripoff of 2000 Jarrett.
They had the same shit going on.
Yeah, like 2008, he's coming back from the
quad tear.
We'll
talk about 2003 when you got just like, Jarrett holding it down in TNA, winning every match by a screw job, keeping the title. You got Triple H winning every goddamn match by some side of lame. Like, there's some career parallels there.
Yeah, well, H closely followed Jarrett when he left and went to WCW, and he's like, here's a guy I fucking respect,
H2 didn't really rise as a main eventer until he got Jarrett out of the way. That might have been
correct.
A thing. Just like,
yeah, he knew, man.
You know, until I get rid of this guy,
hey,
there's no way they're going with me.
Hey, Vince, I heard Jeff wants to sign with WCW. You should probably just let him.
Interesting thoughts.
A lot of politicking going on.
Good guy, Jeff Jarrett.
I wonder if the Hall of Fame ceremony is going to have another picture of Scott Steiner hung up at all the doors saying, don't allow this man into the building.
I would assume.
Oh, that's got to be building up to him eventually getting in.
Oh, you can't keep the guy out forever. The Steiners are going
to
get
in there.
Don't
talk to me about Hall of Fame ceremonies until Scotty Steiner's back in there.
Anywho, what do we got on the very special Devil's Trumpet rundown?
This week, Devil's Trumpet presents Stifler's Rundown of World Championship Wrestling from January 23rd, 1988. Getting back away from those movie reviews, dabbled in Hollywood a bit, and now we're
our toe.
Back in Richmond, Virginia, a place we feel a little bit more comfortable.
Where you should be.
Out there in that L.A. Geez. First match, we got the Rock and Roll Express versus Tommy Angel and Cougar J.
Yeah.
Coolest names in wrestling. Rock and Roll into that double dropkick. Second match, Sting. He's in there with a masked scrub named Gladiator Number One.
Not,
I think there was probably a Gladiator Number Two.
No, there was.
I don't think so.
I know for a fact.
This feels like a scam to me.
No, I'm very familiar
Sting
with
wins with the Scorpion Deathlock. We got Warlord and Ivan Koloff. They're all part of Paul Jones's army. They're in there against Mark Fleming and Bob Riddle. Koloff kind of drops an elbow off the top rope. The guy's stretched over the Warlord's shoulder, and then he just kind of flapjacks onto the mat. It was a cool little double team move for those guys.
Wasn't bad.
They got some nice little double team moves for not being regular tag team partners.
Mm-mm.
Speaking of tag team partners, the Sheepherders. These guys know each other very well.
With
their flag boy, Johnny Ace.
Yeah.
Got this flag going there. Luke, you want me to stand in this corner?
I can't do a Johnny Ace. I don't know. He's got that stupid Super Dave voice.
Yeah. Yeah, power to the people.
Yeah, they're in there versus Larry Stevens and Trent Knight. Sheepherders win after a double gutbuster.
Oh, yeah. Off of the battery.
Stan Lane, one half of the Midnight Express.
Sweet Stan.
He's in there with Dick Murdoch. We're getting a lot of these weird tag teams.
Yeah.
We're like a guy with a regular tag team partner, teams with somebody else instead. Either way, they got Jim Cornette in their corner, and they're in there versus Andrew Bellamy and Stan Cruz.
Correct.
Murdoch gets the pin after one of those sloppy, delayed brainbusters he does,
yep,
where he looks like he's just like a drunk idiot while he's doing it.
That's
it was
like,
great.
It's like when you get drunk at the bar,
mm-hmm,
and you're like, I'm going to roughhouse with this guy.
Yeah.
We're having a good
check
time.
Check out how strong I am.
Yeah, everybody else is like, oh, I'm
everybody's
really
like,
uncomfortable
yeah, picking
right
their
now.
Beer bottles
oh,
up
God.
Off the table,
oh, I wish
moving
you
chairs
be doing that.
So you
nah,
guys don't trip
nah,
over them.
I got this.
That's exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
Arn Anderson, AA, the enforcer of the Four Horsemen, in there with jobber extraordinaire George South.
How about Jobber to the Stars?
Jobber to the Stars, George South. Another brainbuster finish. I guess Double A called it a
gourd buster.
Because
he drops them on their face.
Yeah, kind of goes face first instead of like back a little bit. But you're still just getting a guy up in a souple position and dropping him on his noggin.
Yeah.
Either way, this one looks much less sloppy. Arn Anderson wins. Ron Garvin, Hands of Stone. He was in there with Andrew Bellamy.
But wait.
I gotta tell you, my roommate walked through the room while this was happening, and I talked to her for a minute, and I didn't pay attention to how it ended, but I'm sure Ronnie Garvin won.
How about the fact
with a punch.
How about the fact that that wasn't Andrew Bellamy doing double duty?
What are we talking here now? Is there a little bit of a,
okay, well,
a switch
Andrew,
up going on here?
Andrew Bellamy took
the
loss.
Oh, yeah, so he was in there against Stan Cruz earlier, so they just put this name up on the Chiron twice. But
now, the big difference
this was a different guy.
Is Andrew Bellamy, and we'll get to it in more detail.
Sure, sure.
Is an African-American gentleman.
Uh-huh.
This guy was a honky.
Right.
Named Gene Liggin.
Gene Liggin. How'd you get that name?
Because Jim Ross immediately said
it. Okay, so he corrected
it on
like, commentary.
I was like, this guy's wrestling twice? This guy's white now?
Okay, yeah, I didn't catch that. I was just going by what they put up on the screen.
Yeah.
It's silly me, because WCW gets that wrong so often.
He had a GL on his boots.
Mm-hmm.
Which was also a pretty good giveaway that his name was not
Gaylord.
It could have been that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't Andrew Bellamy.
Okay. So he lost anyways.
Yeah.
Okay,
Garvin stomped.
That's not the main event.
Garvin did that Garvin stomp and then
sat on. It
sounds
like that would be the main event probably of the show, but
well,
it turns
be.
Out that's they didn't because they put on another match. Ooh, big deal.
What, they have like a 2 minute?
Barry Windham versus Tully Blanchard for the Western States Heritage Championship.
Yeah, but clearly, like, they didn't show it all. They ran out of time.
Oh, man, no. It ended in a big brawl. They went on for a long time.
They showed it all?
There was a lot of stuff going on.
Oh, wow.
It was great.
Yeah.
For once, they gave us a big match and didn't just end it in the middle of the match.
Who won?
You know, I'm going to call it a no contest.
Nobody.
I'm going to call it a no contest.
Nobody won.
The viewer won.
Yeah, I guess so.
We got a decent match. No finish, but you know, whatever. It's TV. Let's get into this five count. Our five talking points where we dig a little bit deeper into this show.
The five count.
What's your number one?
WCW or NWA, whatever you want to call it.
Jim Crockett Promotions?
Sure. You have too much shit going on.
I'm not so sure. That's the truth.
You have too much shit going on.
In what way?
Well,
you're getting confused, can't keep up with it, too highbrow for you?
It's a little too Frasier for me.
Can you stop being a shrink and just be like a guy?
Like a guy. Like a guy. Screw her!
What?
Yeah, you don't need her. She's trash.
Yeah, trash.
You're better off without her. We both are.
I like the sound of this.
Yeah, so do I. It's unattractive, yet liberating. Rather like the one and only time I wore a European bathing suit.
They've got an hour and a half to cram this up. Well, 2 hours back then with commercials, blah, blah,
sure.
blah.
Uh-huh.
To get it all in, right?
And they're, get those sponsors in.
They're throwing in events that are happening tomorrow. They're throwing events that are happening at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about events that are going to happen the beginning of the following
there
month.
There you go.
But haphazardly and random and within the same promos. And God damn if it's not confusing. Because we're going to go to New Jersey and we're going to be in Long Island. And then we're going to be in New York. But no, we're going to be down in the South. And we're going to be in the Carolinas.
Chefs in the kitchen.
Too many irons in the fire, brother.
This is, marketing 101 here. You get one thing that you're promoting
right now.
You promote the hell out of that until it happens, and then you start on the next thing after. You don't say we're doing X, Y, and Z and repeat that over and over again, because that just confuses people.
They keep talking about how the big bunkhouse brawl finals are tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They're going to be tomorrow night on pay-per-view. You got to order that pay-per-view. And then at the same time, they're like, and that big bench press contest is coming up. But that's not at this. That's at a thing at the end of the month.
I believe we got a big thing going on in Charlotte, I think, at the end of the month.
I don't know,
Tomorrow's
man.
The end.
They're talking about that. And then at the very end of the show, what did they hype? Out of nowhere, man. You got to give me a second here to find it. I just wrote down hype in another
you got
show.
Flair coming up with a big match against Hawk. I think that's at the Bunkhouse Finals.
I think that's the Bunkhouse Finals. And then you have the Bunkhouse Finals. And then you have the bench press, which is coming up.
There's a steel
God
cage match
knows.
Coming up. With the, no, a barbed,
the
wire,
barbed wire
match,
match
coming up. Who's in that?
That's Nikita Koloff and Dick Murdoch.
Okay, yeah. And Dick Murdoch, his main storyline that we're getting right at the beginning of the show, we got a clip of that, is his... He's trying to collect that bounty on Dusty.
Yeah.
So he's doing a barbed wire match with Nikita.
Yeah, they've mentioned nothing about a possible build-up with Dusty and Dick Murdoch.
I think they're very confused right now. This is kind of leads into part of my 1A. I was going to talk a little bit about right now they're starting to figure out pay-per-view and they're starting to figure out TV, but they don't really know how they're going to do it because their houses are down in 1988. They're losing those house show things, so right now they're trying to build those back up. They're trying to give you as many big matches at the house shows as you can, but at the same time, they can see that TV and pay-per-view is like the way it's gonna. So like,
but they're trying to just hype anything and everything at once.
It doesn't work.
And with
they're
no
doing too much.
Discernible order.
And that first Rock and Roll Express match, if you watch it, Rock and Roll comes out. Crowd's always fucking electric, just molten when these guys come out, and this crowd barely cares. Like, they're getting cheered, but like only like a quarter of the people are standing. They're not nuts for it, and that tells me that this is one of those marathon TV tapings, probably, where
this
is like
the third time
hour
come
four
out.
Of this. Yeah, these people have probably seen the Rock and Roll Express three or four times at this point. And I think this is a large part of why all their houses were decreasing in 1988, because more and more everything was TV tapings as they try to focus more on TV. And you just, instead of getting like a big house show thing with cool matches, you're just getting this endless shit with just squash match after squash match after squash match.
And it's hard for anybody to care. It's hard for me to care.
So,
we're only watching an hour and a half of it.
Yeah, you got, I put down that they're mentioning the pay-per-view a lot, which seems to be the first sort of era where they're doing that. Tomorrow night on pay-per-view. Tomorrow night. So they're getting that going. But they're still worried about those house shows.
They're still talking about the fucking
They're still trying to sell
press.
Tickets for those. Oh, I think the bench press actually is at the Stampede.
No, it's going to be at the end of the month. I swear they said it
There's
was
a
like
couple
a
things
time.
That are at that end of the month one. The barbed wire match is another one. I think it was in... They were promoting... At least two, but I think three upcoming events at the same time and using the same show to do it. And it just, everything gets too unfocused. You can't promote that many things at once.
The barbed wire match.
Mm-hmm.
God bless JR.
Oh, yeah. He really put that
over. He's trying to put it over. And
dangerous.
He's like, this barbed wire match is going to be brand new barbed wire, as we call it in Oklahoma. New barbed wire is called cat killing barbed wire.
That's right. You get
what
get
the
shredded
fuck
up
does
that
mean?
people get caught up in barbed wire, animals, babies, anything. Dick Murdoch was talking about it in that promo he cut, man. He's out there, he's stretching out barbed wire all day long with his truck.
He works with cattle.
That's what he does.
He's got his, I know, he's got his diesel Ford truck, as he stated. And then you go all the way to the end of the show, after they've been talking about two different events the entire show, the very last thing they talk about is fucking Barry Windham and Lex Luger hyping up a tag match for a third show.
Sure, yeah. That got set up in the, that was where the third show came
in. It's like, get the fuck out of here, man.
So yeah, I just wanted to talk about that as my number one. This houses are down because they're focusing too much on TV, but now they're getting worried about that, so they're trying to focus on houses again. And I mean, the wheels are coming off the car. They don't completely come off until 1989, but you know, we're getting there. We're starting to see why this company is going to be sold soon. They've been buying companies up to this point. Too many. They're in too many markets. They got playing to too many masters. Pretty soon they're going to get bought.
It's such a mess because like everybody comes out and they cut these promos and they're just not that slick. And they're just like, I got a problem with this guy. Mm-hmm. But then I also got a problem with that guy.
Yeah.
And I know this guy also has a problem with that guy.
Yeah, Sting just came into the company.
We've got a problem.
And he's feuding with Flair.
I got a problem.
Flair doesn't seem to know it.
Right, yeah. I tell
you what. Flair's feuding with three other people right now.
My number two, you just talked about the guy. Okay. If there's one guy that can almost make this mess work, it's Ric Flair.
Oh, sure.
Because he comes out for that promo. Well,
part of his gimmick is just naming off people's names over and over again in a row.
But it works great because he does it all in order.
So he's just used to it.
He just addresses everything and it fucking works. And he's not just...
A little bit of that I like. I like that everybody kind of mentions the world champ a little bit in their promos because like they should be going
for him.
That
should be your focus.
And the world champ should be like looking at two or three guys because he knows that everybody's gunning for him.
Looking over his shoulder all the time. Yeah.
But still then you also do have to have one... You can have like one main feud everybody's focusing on and then they spend like a second to mention something else. You can't have people feuding with two or three different people like equally at the same time. It's confusing as fuck.
But I give it to Flair. He comes out, you know, he's got the new big belt. When did they switch to the big belt?
Yeah, it had to have been around this time, actually.
Because I feel like...
That original beautiful one he has with, like, his name fully, in gold at the bottom.
The,
and it's on that sort of...
20 pounds of
dark,
glory or
yeah,
whatever,
yeah, that dark leather strap. Like, it's...
The giant faceplate.
Looked great, that original version of that. And then they just kind of started making copies and copies and copies of it as the year went by, and you get like less and less detail every year.
Yeah.
By the time it was like a WWF title, it just kind of looked like
a gold
one
turd.
Giant smooth like plate. Yeah. Here, though, that thing's ornate.
Oh, yeah, it's
ornate.
It's beautiful. But he's got it slung over his shoulder. He's cutting into
Looking
Sting.
Like $1 million.
Sting was just out talking shit about him, and so he addresses it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't just glance over it. He's talking about how Sting's frustrated punk kid running around with teenagers and training bras.
It's not
so
his time yet.
He's giving you, you know, he's giving you a backhanded...
Slow your roll, kiddo.
Yeah, a little backhanded acknowledgement right there.
While at the same time building up what a cocksmith he is.
Right. He's like,
throw a little bit of that.
You can't be first, but you can... Damn sure be next. So he moves on from Sting.
But there's a little caveat there.
What?
You could probably be next, but there's another thing that I hear. He had a pretty steadfast rule. No hair, no flair.
Oh, yeah.
Don't be shaving that bush, ladies, or he's going to kick you out of his room at the Marriott.
That goes, what do you think he's talking about when he means teeny boppers and the trainee bros?
No hair, no flair.
Yeah.
Putting it out there, all you girls eyeballing me. You know, big podcast star. I see you out there in public. I'm with Flair.
Yeah. That's tried and true rule of yours.
Ugh.
I've seen you send him away.
Throw you out of here so goddamn
fast.
See
you send him away at the bar. Hey, honey, let me get a peek down there. Nope.
I pull down those britches and I find a razor rash instead of a big lush forest.
Only
give
on
me a break.
Only on a Wednesday at Living Dead Girls.
Oh, yeah. This should be another sponsor.
Razor Rash Wednesdays.
We also have a gentleman's club
that's
putting together. We're getting it off the ground soon.
Correct.
Living Dead Girls. It's a goth trailer trash themed strip
club. I'll turn a girl.
Yeah.
I'll turn a girl.
There's going to be a lot of C-section scars and lower back tattoos. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
Imagine, what was that? Suicide Girls?
That website with all the like sad girls
getting
naked for too little money.
Imagine Suicide Girls, but with the sleaze of Backpage.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that
sounds great.
Yeah, it's real nice.
All right, we got to cut all that out.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Just bleep it.
Okay, number two, on my side, I just want to talk for a minute about that Road Warriors promo. Because I was talking about how the Rock and Roll Express came out, and people weren't really giving them they gave them a bit of a lukewarm reaction. Yeah. I've never seen the Rock and Roll get such. These Road Warriors, I got to say, this is the most subdued I've ever seen them
in an interview.
They cut a promo. Either way, Road Warrior Animal had his eyes closed the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
This dude was fucking chiefed as hell.
It was after the Sheep Herders match.
Hawk is just completely subdued. When it gets cut to him, he's like not even hollering. So I'm thinking like either this is really just like hour nine on it, or these guys were chiefing it up hardcore backstage. Like, this seemed like a show. I don't know. It seemed everybody was just off their game a little bit. Like, nobody really cared. I was just so shocked to see a Road Warriors promo where I was like, these guys are like talking at conversational levels and they're not even animated. Like,
Hawk's big talking point was, Flair, the difference between you and I is if I make a bet and I lose it, I'm not paying. It's like, well, you're just a poor sport then, man.
Yeah, to be fair, though, I don't think Flair's really paid too many debts.
Oh, no.
I know a little bit about Flair's personal life.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's got some outstanding debts out there.
Yeah, search, just put it in your Bing box, Ric Flair financial problems, 2000s. Yeah, sure.
I mean, you might overload Bing, hits you're going to get back on that one. Nah, that's probably not true. You can't overload Bing. They're very high quality.
He was in WWE, like, out of shape and dying just because he needed money again. And I think he was
in Australia, 60 pounds overweight and bleeding like a stuck pig against 80-year-old Hulk Hogan because he was out of work and needed money.
He had, like, one of those moments where it was, like, he needed money and, like, WWE was like, okay, man, like, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some, like, angle with Edge. He was doing a program with Edge, and he got in, like, a car accident and, like, the person was like, oh shit, are you Ric Flair? And he's like, yeah, I'm Ric Flair. Please don't sue me. Mm-hmm. I think like Edge cut like a vignette where he's like driving down the highway in a robe.
Just this drunk, crazy Flair.
And like hitting people putting people in the figure four leg lock.
Well, that's hilarious.
Yeah, that's
I'm going to have to Bing that one.
Yeah, that's going to be nice.
Look up that one on BingTube.
Look forward to that on the Twitters this week, folks.
Yeah, for
sure. That could be a match of the week.
What do we got? You got like a number three?
Oh, Road Warrior.
We're moving on to a number three.
Oh, immediately after that, Sweet Stan Lane and Dickie Murdoch.
Dickie Murdoch. I want to talk about this one, too.
I was so mad at first because I was like, what the fuck are they doing? Like, this show's all over the place. Mm-hmm. Like, why are these two tagging? And then I saw them tag.
Oh, it's a beautiful, God, just like contrast and styles that are.
It is the greatest,
just
man.
Sweet and salty, like
it is.
It's
why I like to have dudes bigger than me around me when I'm running my mouth.
Sure,
like Sweet stands in there, just like throwing badass kicks,
just looking pretty and doing karate
and like doing little like jigs and like sonnery moves. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, look at me, ladies love me, check me out. And then I'll just like throw the dude to the outside and be like, Murdoch,
hey Murdoch,
why don't you hit this guy with a
wear
chair?
Him out.
And Murdoch's just like, bah, spitting and yelling.
Like the third or fourth Dick Murdoch match we've got in this 1988 WCW. And I still have not figured out why he can just wear people out with chairs every match. And
it's not
a disqualification.
He does.
He's never been disqualified. Not once yet.
He hits, who did he hit? I think he had Stan Cruz out there first. He hits him in the back of the head.
Yeah.
With the spine
real
of the
hard
chair.
Yeah, just the end of the chair.
Just the,
it was like where like the skull and the neck connect.
He just like thumps him with it and then starts choking him with the cord and like Sweet Stan's just like, yep. Keep it up, friend. You're doing a great job.
Meanwhile, JR and Tony are just like scrambling away from that table. Just like, oh, God, here he goes.
This guy's fucking insane. Oh, I almost buried the lead. The best part of the match.
Jim Cornette on commentary, standing over JR's shoulder.
No, we'll get to that.
Okay.
The best part, Captain Redneck
coming
out to that Midnight Express music.
It's not even ripoff, but whatever replacement the WWE Network is on there, still got like sort of that late 80s Spaceman
like,
vibe.
Yeah,
and
synth housey, whatever.
Definitely
just like,
not what they're playing on the jukeboxes and the old honky tonks that Captain Redneck's going to
the
after
ones
the
that,
matches.
Cornette's pulling them out of?
Well, Cornette's mother is old Mama Cornette's. $274 at the Squirrel Tooth Saloon. Give me a break.
That was a good bit.
I'm just really, yeah, I'm loving Cornette just getting over on guest commentary. Not really just like sitting at a professional table like they do these days, but just standing over JR's shoulder. And I just kind of remember, and I've seen these guys call some shows together, just how great Cornette is at getting under JR's skin and needling him.
Oh, yeah.
And how much better JR is as a commentator when he's got somebody needling him and riling him up and like calling him out on stuff and trying to confuse him. And he gets all frustrated and just starts getting pissed. And then, yeah, I love salty JR. That's my favorite JR. And we got some of that here.
You're on live wire. Good morning. Hello. You're on live wire.
Jim Ross.
Yeah?
I followed you through WCW.
Yeah.
I'd like to say that Goldust will beat Hunter for the belt.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I'm sorry. Enough. Yeah. Next.
Bless his heart.
Next.
Bless his little heart. He got nervous. No. You're on live wire. Good morning.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your question or comment?
You were talking about, Goldust being, or somebody being the champion that wasn't Hunter.
Oh, go to the next one.
I don't know. We don't have time.
Folks,
open for
him. If you're going to be on this program, you got to think a little bit. You got to be prepared. We're not playing calls here, folks. You're either going to get on or you're going to get off. And we're not going to waste any time here. You're
no
on live
pressure.
Wire.
No pressure.
Cornette's loudmouth, fast-talking, just a rich boy, mama's boy character. That's everything that JR hates.
So,
everything that he hates.
I promised we'd get to it, so I'm going to get to it. Murdoch's doing the beatdowns on everybody. Beats up Stan Crew, or what's his name? Doesn't matter.
He's somebody.
Yeah. And
he's in there.
Then he gets a hold of the
Andrew. Stan Crews, that's a guy.
Yeah.
We got two Stans in that match.
Two Stans. That's why it was
a little confusing.
So then he gets his hands on old Andrew Bellamy,
mm-hmm.
who he ends up hitting the Brain Buster on.
Yeah.
And he's...
big old sloppy Brain Buster.
Mr. Bellamy is an African-American gentleman, and Captain Redneck's beating him up, and Cornette,
mm-hmm.
he's like, hey, you know, you look at this, look at this Ralph Bellamy here. It's like, okay.
Look at this Ralph Bellamy here.
Yeah, he's just burying
God
him.
Goddamn.
He's like, Ralph Bellamy, that's clearly not his name, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, Captain Redneck, he beats you up so bad, you don't know where you are. Like Ralph over here, you know, look at Ralph. I tell you what do you get when you cross Ralph Bellamy with a groundhog? 6 more weeks of basketball, brother.
Wow.
That's racist!
That's the next word I had written down after that.
Matt, that's racist.
Wow, that's the racist thing we've heard.
Yeah, that might be the... Jim Cornette, God bless you. He's doing a lot to... you know, push a progressive agenda these days. Back then, he was a heel, baby.
Nah, I'm pretty sure he's just racist.
Nah.
All right.
He's...
agree to disagree.
It was the 80s. Everybody was racist. But, you know, I feel like Jim Cornette, he's evolved over time. My number 4, just want it for a minute. Talk about how smooth Arn Anderson is in the ring. How great everything he does looks. And how I think... you'd factor in just the fact that he cuts such a great, serious, fired-up promo. I think he's probably the best wrestler of all time. This match, goddamn, just a jobber match. But he's just all these little things that I appreciate. He's like isolates this guy's arm. He doesn't just drop a knee on it. He drops a knee on it, and then he grinds his knee in a couple seconds. He's just doing a little extra thing every time to make everything he does look so much meaner and so much more awesome. I was just thinking about what a goddamn shame it is. Right now, they got him and Tully especially, and Flair and whatnot, and they're just such huge parts of just the upper card of this company, and all these shows are built around them so much.
They're like, there's 3 of them. One of them's a singles wrestler. The other 2 are a tag team, but they're still like somehow in like 3 or 4 of the top programs.
Yeah, they could all just
at
be
every
that
show.
Main eventer, no problem. And then like this company is so falling apart and so confused that like not too long from now, they just get pissed off because they're not getting paid like main eventers. So then they go to the WWF and you're thinking like, oh man, 2 of like the top heels in the fucking other company, these big main eventers, great guys that can do everything, they're coming in. This is going to be like a huge sort of like, should have been like a Hall and Nash in the late 90s jumping over type situation. But nah, instead they just kind of get stuck in a tag team and they did fine. They put the titles on them, but like, you know, they had Heenan doing all their talking for them. They didn't talk much. They weren't a huge focal point of the company whatsoever when they were up north. And it's just like, feels like such a goddamn shame. Like at this point, like, I don't know, Arn and Tully should have been getting way more recognition, way more money for sure. I'm on your side there, Tully. I know you're a little salty about that, and always have been.
A lot of it went up his nose.
Yeah, these guys should just be like respected as the greatest fucking heels, the greatest wrestlers ever, because they just continually killed it throughout the entire 80s, week after week after week.
Yeah, they was good.
And their
dudes.
Careers both just fucking fizzled out instead of just like ending in great ways. No world title runs, no like. You know, well, there are plenty of memorable feuds, but spotlight was never on these guys the way it should have been. So, yeah, my number four is just shouting out Arn Anderson. I do it a lot, but, you know, it bears repeating.
Yeah, he's a good dude. I'm going to, my four is going to go to another guy who's a good guy.
Who?
Good old JR.
Jim Ross.
Yeah.
Just a, you know, rosy-cheeked boy from Oklahoma made good.
He did something no one's ever done.
Oh, wow. Breaking new ground.
There was a match that you had a conversation during, rightfully so.
Oh, yeah, the
Ronnie Garvin.
I couldn't believe how unprofessional of me not to pause that Ronnie Garvin
stone,
match,
man.
And just, you know, watch every second, pour over every second of that match.
I don't know. Former
NWA world champion.
I think I might have been making fun of a line. I think somebody said Ronnie Garvin wrote the book on something, and I just wrote down, Ronnie Garvin wrote the book on boring.
There you go.
Get it?
Funny. It's pretty funny. Yeah.
But JR starts in the middle of the match as I'm drifting in and out of attention. It's like, this is Ronnie Garvin. I tell you, you know, you see him at the hotel, and he's always thinking about his matches. And, you know, you get about an hour, 2 hours out to showtime, and he starts getting antsy, and he's moving all around the lobby, and he can't sit still, and he's looking to fight. He's looking to fight. He takes this serious.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, here's somebody trying to give insight
a little bit
to
of,
Ronnie fucking
little bit
Garvin.
A character work. Hey, Ronnie comes out here and
as
he
a,
just...
Posed a fucking...
Has the same stiff-ass robotic match every time. But.
Instead of Davy Crockett being like, he's tough. he could punch you. He's
ho.
Tough.
Ho.
Ho.
Not slam.
Yeah. JR's like, I'm going to give...
Hop!
Yeah. Like,
Yeah, that was probably when, like the Garvin that would have been his call when the Garvin stomp was happening.
But like clearly this dude's nothing but just a meathead prick of a human being.
Fucking Jim Ross is out there polishing turds, trying to give this guy some
nuance. No, he's not a dick. He's just super focused. Like, dude's intense.
He fucking takes a couple hours before every show and he, gets jacked up.
Just like how you didn't want Kenny Shamrock to enter that zone.
Oh, no, he'd get in that zone, and then there was no stopping
him. Same thing with Ronnie. So, JR, consummate professional.
Mm, except for, when he let Flair get drunk at that video game interview or whatever.
No, I don't think
and then
that's
he had to be
fault.
Fired. And then he had to be fired.
I don't think that's... Is that his fault?
Number five, we're probably just going to talk about that main event match, because we haven't addressed it. And it was a lot of fun.
Booze bags.
It was a lot of fun.
It was.
These guys, at the top of their game right now, Tully Blanchard, Barry Windham especially, probably you can make a case that Barry Windham's the best guy in wrestling at this point in 1988.
That's fair.
He seems poised to just... have a big run, be that big main eventer. If he was in that spot they got Luger in right now, being like the next anointed guy, like going against Flair, I really think it would have worked out a lot better. And you could have had him beat Flair and run with the title for a little bit, and people would have liked it. But these guys, just, classic fucking Southern wrestling right here. You got a heel just aggressively attacking a body part.
Mm-hmm.
You got a good guy just passionately fighting from underneath, trying to come back, even though he's hurt. Textbook shit. And the crowd, who up to this point just looked like fucking exhausted, like they could barely stand to be there, they're molten again.
They're
fucking insane. They're
finally
super
happy to
into
see
it.
Wrestling.
Cutting away from the match every once in a while to hear Lex Luger talk was a really bad idea.
It started off okay, and it goes into our Lex Luger thoughts. At first,
when
it was
thought they were gonna talk to him once, it was a little weird. They're doing it during a match. But it was like, okay, whatever.
Okay. He didn't do anything bad.
Keep him in people's mind because he's part of this storyline here.
And then they show him again, and it was like, well, he's okay. He's just watching the match intently.
Oh, man, you start getting down to that of the wire
then
when these guys are really building something. And people are interested in the
third
match.
Third time, and he starts saying names wrong.
You're
and
gonna
he's
cut
just,
away to him again. During the best parts of the match.
You got Brian Winter, Bear Wing Jam.
Yeah, either way, they built this match up great. They were talking about it all through the episode, making it seem like, hey, you're going to see a real match. These guys came out and beat the shit out of each other. Started off with just stiff shit. Then you get the big spot, the turning point in the match where Tully cheats and hits his leg with that chair. And man, it was awesome after he got hit, his knee walloped with that chair.
I'm sorry, did he cheat?
Well, you know, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Ref
wasn't paying attention.
Did he?
It's kind of his fault. It's kind of on Tommy Young. But man, after Wyndham got that shot to his knee, he sold the shit out of that. I was loving it. You never see a good guy selling a thing like this, just begging and crying like, you
know.
Good guys are always trying to look too cool, too stoic. Like
right before
this guy just sounded like a hollering old woman, just like
right before they go to a commercial break. Mm-hmm. There's a bit. Wyndham's trying to get back into the ring on that bad knee.
Oh, he's hobbling,
and he's like at the apron.
Oh, he's hobbling.
He's grabbing the bottom rope, and Tully comes over and just starts kicking him in the face.
Sure,
like you ain't getting back in the ring, fella. Like it's not happening. And Wyndham does this thing. He like takes two steps back, and he does this like, I'm going to fall over because I can't keep my own weight up, but I'm also going to like throw up because the pain's so bad.
If he would have like thrown up, it would have been next
around,
level.
He's just like, rah, 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 and then just falls over as they go to commercial.
Him throwing up is the only thing that could have made this match a step above.
Absolutely. Real quick, going back to your boy Lex Luger and his little promos, he did give me a goal for this summer.
Oh, okay. Wow. Summertime goals.
I want to get just ripped to shit.
Sounds great.
And then wear pastel polos with the collar up.
That makes a lot of sense.
You in on that?
Yeah, just roll around like 1980s high school movie villains.
Yep.
Sounds
just
great.
Those acid wash jeans he had.
Ugh.
He was looking great.
So the big ending of this match.
Oh, coming back from that commercial break because he's down on the ground. Nice little touch I liked was they throw back to the title card.
Okay,
Who you're watching, you know, Barry versus Tully.
You know, this is a big fucking title match.
For the you know, very prestigious Western States Heritage Championship. Again, WCW, you have too much shit going on.
Well, they bought that big Texas company,
man.
Yeah,
but it's like when WWF had like...
They had big plans.
The hardcore champion, the Intercontinental champion.
Oh, are we talking about
the European champion?
When the WWF had too many titles?
Yeah, you know,
I don't remember when that was.
Either way, bad. But they come back.
I loved the big finish of this match, though. They set it up. There's enough time in the episode left. You're getting close enough to a half an hour where you can swear this is just going to be a 30-minute time limit draw.
Yeah.
You swear it's going to happen.
Well, first of all, I didn't think they'd deliver like the last time. They're going to run out of time.
Because
JR, God bless him, hyping the match the entire show. Like, you're going to want to see this, folks. Like, stick around. This is the thing you're going to watch. And it's like, well, that's a nice touch, but God bless you, JR. There's going to be like 5 minutes left
when
this match
starts.
Match.
We get down to the wire.
Yeah.
Fucking Wyndham finally makes his big comeback. He's got Tully covered. The ref's about to count. Boom, the bell rings. And that's when the shoe drops. You're like, there it is.
There
what
it is.
I was expecting.
Ran out of time.
Time limit draw. But no, it turns out the match is still going. There wasn't a time limit draw. We're at 28 minutes in. And
what happened?
Old J.J. Dillon, the Horseman manager, he took it upon himself to trick Barry Windham, ring that bell,
that
make
dirty
him
old
think
dish
time
rag.
Was up. So instead of pinning the man, Windham gets up like a dum-dum and he's looking up like an idiot. This is a great heel trick.
Hell yeah.
Real great stuff, but then they kind of ruin it when they do this thing where they're having everybody watch the instant replay to like explain to the referee like what happened, and it takes them like 5 minutes to show all the footage again.
Yeah, I hate that because like they still do that in wrestling today. But, like, they'll be, like, every once in a while you're going to watch the instant replay.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the 30 other times.
Yeah, but there's no established,
like,
oh, you can
so
watch an instant replay.
You and when don't
What's
you?
What's the instant replay rule in wrestling?
But then you also.
Why can Dick Murdoch hit people with chairs and nobody else can?
Yeah. I'm okay with that rule.
Captain Redneck's rules is a little like thing like before Raven's rules. They just never told us he had his own contract.
You want to be the guy that tells him he can't do it?
You send David Crockett over to explain it to him.
Oh, gee. Oh, boy. Oh, poor Rich.
Sure hate to get under your skin here, Murdoch, but I was talking to Dusty and...
You can't be doing that. But like you said, they go for that replay thing, which is fine, but they backed it up to like 5 minutes. And so you had to watch them watch wrestling for 5 minutes.
And it just took everything from like a great fucking thing where I was like, this is awesome.
Fever
to
pitch,
just
man.
Boom, just
crowd's
on,
hot.
Stops on a dime. Like, kill it. Like, what you do is this, you have JJ ring the bell. Everybody stands up confused. The ref goes to look at the timekeeper. Everybody's shaking their head. No, no. Wyndham gets up. He's shrugging his shoulders, asking people what's going on, what's going on. And then you have Tully roll him up and pin him. Yeah. And then, you know, it protects Wyndham. He doesn't look like a great, like a huge moron because it was a great trick. It makes Tully look good because he's conniving and he stole a win.
Yeah, but you can't take that prestigious Western States Heritage Championship title off of Wyndham.
Oh, that's true. That thing's going to stick around for a long time, and they were going to be talking about it a long time.
People always...
I think that would have helped, too, with this big storyline they're building where, you know, you get Luger, the horsemen come out, and they start beating on Luger because Luger runs out like an idiot in the middle of it, so, like... This is step two in this Barry Windham storyline. Step one was last time we watched it. Flair said in the interview, "Hey, Barry Windham, we got our eye on you. We want you to join the Horsemen." This is step two. They're holding Luger, and they give Windham the option. They say, hey, Windham, fucking join us, hit this guy. And Windham's like, no way, I ain't going to do it. So he starts fighting Flair. I think if you have him take a pin here, that helps out that storyline. It helps that frustration to him. I keep trying to do it the right way.
Yeah.
But, you know, these guys got it figured out. They're stealing wins from me. You know,
got it.
I'm friends with this idiot Luger who keeps ruining my matches and getting me in bad.
You want to be a winner, join some winners.
Yeah, I think that would have...
We will
really
let you win.
Given Tully that pin here would have... not hurt anybody, would have moved this storyline on.
Yeah, but you can't.
It wouldn't
lose
have gave
that.
Us that fucking 5 minutes of making everybody watch a goddamn
you can't
monitor.
Lose that Western States Heritage Championship. Sorry, I have to keep scrolling up to see what it's called because I don't remember. Hey, there's. I tell you what, when Flair was like, "Come on, hit Lex," and he's like, "No, I can't. I'm a good guy." There's one guy that would have hit Lex.
Who is it?
Old flannel shirt guy that jumped out of the stands and into the ring.
Well, it's amazing how much this match worked because even though, like I said, it got ground to a halt by that big everybody standing around watching them. Once they all were jumping on Luger, this crowd was still insane. Like,
insane.
They had to cut the crowd mic because they were screaming
it was so
loud. Once they started triple teaming Luger,
there was just a sousance of my favorite thing in the world.
Sure.
Throwing garbage.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know if you saw a cup or something bounce across the ring.
Actually, this whole crowd, now that you mention it, looked like a flannel bomb went off in there.
Oh,
like, every single goddamn person was just a, you know, grizzled working man dressed in flannel.
We talked about it. Go, if you don't watch the show, that's fine. I don't blame you in the least bit. But watch the first 5 minutes of the show because they give you like 50 different crowd shots where they're just like, look at all the people here coming to support our great product. And it's all just like,
got off of work 5 minutes ago.
I watched the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre last night.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one.
I was
Puffy nips in that movie.
Just got those puffy nips going. I'm watching
I'm
this.
Watch that tonight.
I'm watching this episode and like I can't. I'm getting like lost. Am I watching Texas Chainsaw? No. This is WCW.
Yeah, that's not the Sawyers sitting front row. That's just the entire Southern professional wrestling
Richmond.
Audience.
This is the Richmond Coliseum.
But we got Richmond, that Virginia.
We got that fan running dog.
Bunch of tobacco farmers. Yeah, that guy wanted to help his boy Luger.
Did you see what happened to him?
I didn't. I caught the announcers talking about it, but in the chaos, I missed exactly what was happening.
I went back to watch it carefully. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets into the ring, and as soon as he hits the ring, and he like crosses the threshold of the ropes.
Yeah.
He surveys the land of all those wrestlers.
Who am I taking my shot at?
And he hesitates for 15 seconds in like a, oh, fuck, what did I just get myself into? At which point, Arn Anderson runs up and kicks him in the neck as hard as he can, right?
Oh, Double A. He's the enforcer.
So then Double A proceeds to choke him with both hands.
Uh-huh.
Until he chokes him all the way down to the mat.
Wring his neck.
So that's when I said, hey, Kramer, dude, you ever kill a man before? And he said, what do you think, Junior? These hands have been soaking in ivory liquid.
And then when he's got him down on the mat, he grabs the back of the guy's hair and kicks him again in the neck.
I'm going to go back and watch that little moment. Just watch that.
That's
solidifying it. I'm saying it right now. Any other list I've made in the past is moot. Arn Anderson's my favorite wrestler of all time.
The best part is the whole time Arn Anderson's doing all this, JJ follows over like the annoying little dog
catch,
in the fight.
I did catch the end there where JJ was
JJ's
giving
just
some
throwing
rabbit kicks.
Yeah, at this guy.
Those
like,
little
kicking
rabbit
his
kicks.
Ribs.
Got to get your shots in. Yeah, that's when I was able to track like where they were in the chaos.
It was great. It was
beautiful
great.
Thing. Hot finished. It could have been a little bit hotter maybe if they would have taken our expert advice, but still a pretty good match, pretty hot finish, and this was all in all a pretty damn decent episode of World Championship Wrestling.
It's because they got out of that stupid studio.
Oh, it makes a world of difference.
Oh,
sure
so
makes
much
a world
difference.
Of difference.
Oh, one quick little thing with the fans.
Mm-hmm.
So after that hot little thing, they do the stupid little interview with Lex and Windham, and they're like, well, I'll be your tag partner.
They love each other so
in
much.
In an event so far from now.
They were hugging.
They're hugging, holding hands for way too long.
They would never turn on each other. They are solidified in this upcoming tag match.
As Lex said 8 times while talking
solid
to
unit.
Barry Windham, Windham knows in his heart. Windham knows in his heart.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that was about.
It was that beating, loving heart of Barry Windham that is never going to turn black, and he will never become
never,
a member
ever.
Of the Four Horsemen.
So after that goes way too long, they throw back to Shivani and JR.
Tony Schiavone.
And it's like, everything's been said. Just end the show. Yeah. But they're still like, nah, we're going to let them.
End it on a hot note.
They're going to talk about the pay-per-view some more. So they're talking, they're both facing camera, and you can see, you know, they're against that railing there where the fans are. You see this black dude just coming up. He's about 5-10 feet
Ooh,
back.
He's got an idea.
And he's running up towards the two of them, and he's got his Polaroid camera in his hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And JR and Shivani are talking to each other. Old boy just full-on taps Shivani's shoulder from behind like, excuse me, buddy, turn around so I can take this picture.
Stop your broadcast here.
Yeah.
I got some shit going
and
on.
And Shivani, pro's pro.
No
sells
sold
him. Yeah.
Mm.
But he fired that picture off anyways, and it blinds the camera. And
pretty good. It's
just a
pretty
nice good. Little moment. So way to not have security.
Yeah.
Jim Crockett.
At all.
Guy gets in the ring.
Well, you know.
People are taking pictures.
1980s wrestling. If there's one thing we've learned, it's you win some, you lose some.
You lose a lot of
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Say you're getting tired of lettuce and tomato hamburgers in this town that don't quite make it.
Yeah!
You say that just once you'd like your hamburger hot and your lettuce and tomato cool and crisp all at the same time.
Yeah!
Well, I say you got it. I'm talking McDonald's new lettuce and tomato hamburger, the McDLT.
I'm talking quarter pound of beef on the hot, hot side.
And the hot stays hot.
The new McDLT. Lettuce and tomato on the cool, cool side.
And the cool stays cool.
The new McDLT.
Cool crisp.
The beef stays hot. The cool stays crisp. Put it together, you can't resist. The hottest taste, the coolest dish.
Keep the hot, hot. Keep the cool, cool. McDLT, McDLT. Hot, beefy McD. Cool crisp LT. McD. LT. It's a good time. Hot, beefy McD.
For the great taste.
Cool crisp LT.
Could be the best tasting lettuce and tomato hamburger ever.
New McD. LT.
I want 2-3 count. I want 2-3 count like I should.
Oh man, that's an inspired choice. I'm really impressed with what you did with that intro there.
Thank you.
Okay, so we had some technical difficulties. We're in a flood state here.
Yeah.
We lost some power right when we were trying to sign off there and get to the end of our 5 count. But, you know, we're just going to jump back into it and just see how we can piece all this shit together. And there's, you know, WCW problems. You win some, you lose some, as we were saying.
You lose them all.
We're not going to lose most of them. I think our batting average is pretty okay.
That's pretty decent.
Pretty decent, okay.
We kind of got like a journeyman's lifetime average, like 270.
Yeah.
You're not winning a batting title,
sure.
But you're not going to lose a game for anybody either.
Other baseball metaphors as well.
Yeah, you're showing up, you know, you're serviceable. Maybe somebody trades for you. You're a crafty veteran. It's, you know, you're getting down to the playoffs, and it's like, hey, this guy plays a pretty good third base.
Yeah,
let's bring him in.
I'm like a Tom Berenger in Major League.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Jake.
Yeah.
Jake, what?
So I'm a little bit towards the end of my run, but like if I just enough old Icy Hot on the knees, I think I can still knock out a couple seasons in the majors. Yeah. I'm a wily veteran. I got some tricks up my sleeve.
You still got it.
I don't, you know, have the pure youth and ability of a Willie Mays Hayes or a Joe Boo, but I feel like my experience is worth something. You know what I'm saying?
Jesus Christ. You good man. You don't help me hit curveball.
No, that's true. We needed a three count.
Yeah.
I brainstormed.
You did?
We've had this one in our pocket for a while.
Sure.
We started things off talking about our favorite wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
All the way back in episode number one or two.
Oh, on the way, way back.
I think that's what we
machine.
Called them. So we've been saving this one.
We've gone platinum seven times since then.
We're not going to talk about singles wrestlers, but we're still going to talk about our favorite wrestlers. We're going to talk about our favorite tag teams. It's appropriate for this episode because it was like all tag team matches instead of that main event. I was thinking a lot about tag teams. I'm like, who were my favorite tag teams in the 1980s when I was but a wee lad?
Yeah, those are a few of my favorite teams.
Yeah, that's right, because when you're a little kid, the things that are your favorite aren't the same as like a normal person's favorite. Because little kids are idiots.
When a dog barks. When the bee stings.
Like a Bee Brian Blair or Jumping Jim
when
Brunzel.
When I'm feeling sad.
So, when you were a dumb little kid, who was one of your favorite tag teams?
Alrighty.
Number three.
Number three. Not that there's really any order to this shit.
Oh, you gotta order them.
But number three, because without order, what are we?
Animals.
As a young man, I grew up the middle of three boys.
Mm-hmm. Well-established off-air characters.
Yep.
Davey Arshyster and Teddy Bizcliz.
And they were both formative in my wrestling days as a child.
How so?
Well, we just watched it together. We all discovered it together, you know, and stuck with us more than others. But, you know, Ted's come around, you know, he's back in the product. Dave and I never really left the fold. But, you know, my problem with Dave was he liked Hogan and the Taker.
Ugh.
Yeah, get over yourself,
gross.
Right? I was an Ultimate Warrior
forever.
Fan, right? He was the good guy.
And
like
Sting, because their faces were painted.
But a long...
Warrior had tassels.
A long-standing thing that I grew up in was I was always the bad guy, you know?
Yeah.
Ted was older.
Okay.
So he had the G.I. Joes. I had the Cobras.
He's more of the tragic villain, I feel like. He's like...
As it turned out to
the
be.
The Batman villain who like falls into a pit of acid or is like horribly disfigured in some way and then turns into a twisted monster.
Yeah, correct.
You're more of like, I think like the calculating, just like inherently evil from the beginning.
Yes, thank you.
Sort of like Lex Luthor type villain.
That might be the nicest thing you've ever said to me or about me.
Ted,
so thank you.
Ted might be Two-Face and you're Lex Luthor.
There's that bit of humanity left in him. Like,
if only you
he didn't mean
to
turn
to
out that
he's
way.
Too scarred. Yeah, you'll never fully get through to
these
him.
These scars, man. These scars.
And Dave is the Mark from Home Improvement of your trilogy. he's still just not breaking out of that Home Improvement metaphor.
I'm not going to be able to get through this. Just going to be thinking of him as that. So I've always loved the bad guys. And that brings me to... This first team right here, I was a little too young.
Bad boys make me feel so good.
I got to play that at the bar again, remind me.
Oh, yeah, that's a great
bad
one.
Bad boys. This
get in trouble.
One of the gentlemen here had a fine singles run, who we've been covering lately.
Good for him.
But I was a little too young to remember that. But right here is like my bread and butter of what I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about Money, Inc.
Oh, wow.
Little DiBiase and IRS.
Just the rich man and the tax man.
Yeah. They. I knew from an early age, they had money. Mm-hmm. I wanted that money.
Oh, sure.
They're always flaunting in people's faces.
Oh, if only I could get that money.
Yeah.
Look at them.
I'd have everybody doing whatever, just like they're doing.
Oh, he fucking Erwin Arshyster's got all those papers in his briefcase. I bet those are very important papers.
Yeah, I didn't care for him, but I could make Dave be that one day,
you know? Oh, yeah, sure. He did
I could be the guy with the money.
The tax man.
Right.
And you sort of were just the guy who wears sequined suit jackets everywhere.
I just don't have the money, but if I get that money...
And then Ted's Virgil.
Yeah, and then I'm like, Dave, your IRS, your job...
is to make sure I have money.
Yeah.
That's your job.
I'm going to do all my creative endeavors, you know,
because
I'm gifted.
Yeah.
And then you just keep the books balanced.
I got a sweet beard and blonde hair and, you know, some sequin coats.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So, Money Inc.
Money Inc. is the thing I was into. That's a curveball to me. These childhood favorites. I wouldn't picture a kid liking just a couple of snide white guys who cheated a bunch.
I like bad guys. I like cheating.
Yeah, you were a weird little kid. Weird little kid. One of my favorite things, you get the dichotomy of these two guys. They got to come together and work as a team. You could do it different ways. You could have two quick guys just like pushing each other to be quicker. You have two big fat guys just doubling up all that weight, just like extra squishing people. Or you can get a little dynamic that I know is one of your favorites. Something that you stand by.
A good, is it a big guy, little guy
dynamic.
Yeah, buddy.
You get varied matches this way. You get the one guy coming in doing little guy stuff. You get the other guy that can do big guy stuff. And, you know, this little guy isn't the littlest guy in the world, and this big guy isn't the biggest guy in the world, but they still had that dynamic, and I really liked watching them work. These guys are the Hart Foundation, you know, Stu's boys.
I get that pick.
I'll tell you what, it pretty much boils down to one thing. I really like this move they did, where, you know, they'd both hold on to the top rope.
No.
And then Brett would pull the rope back.
Ooh.
And then that big sloppy rhino, Jim Neidhart,
he'd do that slingshot flying tackle over
right
the top
through
rope.
The air.
Knock their opponent down. I love that fucking. That was my favorite double team move of the time in the 1980s. And like that right there is enough to get them on my list. I fucking loved watching that shit.
This is what we call in the industry a tease.
Okay.
But I got thoughts on all that later.
Oh, wow. I'm feeling teased.
Thoughts on all that
thoughts
later.
On flying slingshot shoulder tackles. So yeah, these guys, they were, you know, had great matches as the big popular good guy tag team, but I liked them, you know, retroactively now looking back at their bad guy stuff is a lot better. Earlier when they were first starting off, that stuff's better. But
I agree, I didn't understand
still the good
the
guy
they were just
the tail end
of their
heels. Tail end of their tag team. I was loving them knocking over all those nasty boys and whatnot with their flying shoulder tackle move. Heart attack, their big finish, also a pretty good move. You get a classic big guy lifts a dude up, then little guy jumps through the air and helps him slam him down hard thing.
Hey, hold that guy, I'm going to hit him.
If you got a big guy, little guy tag team, your finisher has to be the big guy holds the guy up, and then the little guy does something to him.
And yeah, like, hold him up, I'm going to hit him.
Or at least, like, little guy could jump off your shoulders or something, depending on how much of a big guy and how much of a little guy you're working with. Either way, big guy, little guy dynamic. It's a classic. I loved it. I needed to get it on my list.
You just set me up here, pal.
Perfect.
You mentioned my number two a couple sentences ago.
Oh, wow. I got him in.
You did. I'm carrying on my tradition of liking the bad guys.
A couple of guys from Pity City.
Oh, baby.
Wow.
Some sweet,
solid pick.
Graffiti tagged coats and some cool sunglasses.
Missing teeth and mohawks.
Some terrible haircuts. And just spitting everywhere.
Big round guys.
Punching people as hard as they can. How about them nasty boys?
Nasty as they want to be, baby.
Yeah, baby.
Another team managed by Jimmy Hart at probably the most memorable point in their career.
Jimmy Hart,
manager of champions.
He's the coolest.
Said it a couple weeks ago. That's underrated to the point where he's probably the best manager of all time. And Arn Anderson, the best wrestler of all time.
Yeah.
This is all. My opinions are getting solidified while we're doing this podcast.
Yeah, Jimmy Hart, he gets a lot of love as a manager.
Sure,
it's
sure.
Not like he's underappreciated.
But nobody ever talks about him the best of all time.
But like if you look back at it, like,
and I haven't even seen his Memphis run, which I'm sure was amazing.
Oh, sure. But like all these people that you want to put in front of him, but if you look at it, you know, statistically and just with a unbiased eye,
he was
the guy, dude.
He was always adding shit to his matches. And back when he had that Nasty Boys graffiti airbrushed all over his coat and his fucking megaphone, those guys made a great team.
That's cool shit. But I love the Nasties. Why?
Why is that?
Pit stop.
Pit stop, take another guy's face, shove it in your friend's armpit.
Yeah. Also, I grew armpit hair way earlier than everybody else I knew.
Oh, wow. That's
that Greek blood
lucky you.
Flowing through me.
Lucky you.
Oh, I was a man's man. Had a mustache, pit full of arm hair, you know.
And watch out, ladies.
Yeah. It's like, hey, I'm going to grab my little brother's face.
Give him that pit
stop. Slam it in my armpit. That's funny.
Not to him.
See, you get these stories in the news about some kids, like, gets his sweet little brother.
Poor boy. It's a good thing school shooters didn't exist back then.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you get those stories in the news where, like, a kid, like, power bombs his little brother to death.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I could never pit stop Davey R. Scheister to death.
Well, there's that one time you broke his leg at Christmas.
It was his ribs.
Oh, sorry.
It was his ribs.
My mistake.
Because I stood on them.
Uh-huh.
And I kept standing on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, oh, I can't breathe, get off. And then I kept standing on them. And he was kept being like, I can't breathe, get off. So
it's,
I did.
It's strange that you ended up in law enforcement.
Well, here's why it's not, though.
Oh, okay.
Because he was like, I can't breathe, it's really hurting.
Yeah.
And then I looked at him, I was like, get up.
Uh-huh.
You don't want to ruin Christmas, do you?
This is on your head.
Yeah, and he was like, no, I don't want to ruin Christmas.
Keep it a secret until New Year's.
Yeah, so shut up.
And then we could
tell
mom your ribs are broken.
Shut the fuck up. Work through it, mm-hmm. man.
I gotta tell you, the Nasty Boys,
they've
got the illustrious honor of being the first pro wrestlers who ever interacted with me at a wrestling event.
Get the fuck out of
here.
They
were the first ones who ever, like, specifically, like, called back to one of my cat calls, and, like, I got in a little bit of dialogue with them.
I almost want to end our friendship right now.
Uh-huh.
Strictly on the fact that you've never told me this story.
Oh, wow, yeah. It was me and the late Mike Westforth, R.I.P.D., one of my best friends when I was a kid. We got taken to a nice house show over at the arena there at the Valpo University.
Oh, we saw
nearby,
Austin.
Nearby from where we are these days.
Doing donuts in the quad.
That's right.
On his ATV.
So, yeah, you know, my dad was cool with foul mouth shit because, you know, my dad's a real bro's bro.
Well, he wanted you to pick him in the divorce.
So me and old 8 or 9 year old Mike Westforth were, you know, taking every opportunity to flip people off and just we were probably calling them the F word, I would assume.
You guys.
Not the F word. The fuck word.
I assume
there was a lot of that late 80s F-word shit going on, probably.
You guys probably looked like a young Nasty Boys
together. Yeah, we did a lot. And the Nasty Boys picked up on it, and they were like, look at these little fucking kids. So they were giving it right back to us, just like calling us little shits and telling us that they were going to beat our asses and stuff. And it was pretty good. Like, we walked out of there being like, did you see that? The Nasty Boys were yelling at us. We're kind of like famous now.
Did you say something about you're going to bang Skaggs' old lady or something?
I don't think I was quite that sophisticated with
that's
my put-downs.
Too bad.
That
would have
been
a good comeback.
Yeah, it would have been pretty good.
Like, imagine being like just a fat, coked up 30-some-year-old wrestler and some 8-year-olds threatening to bang your old lady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that would kind of take them back for a moment.
If I ever have any sort of, you know, like, traveling back in time scenario going on where I can relive my life and do it the right way, that's probably going to be the first thing I change.
Yeah, there you go. Good idea. You got a two?
Yep. I think we're probably going to have some overlap here because I know how much you love them. But I got to put them on my list because they drove me crazy when I was a kid. Because if there's one thing I love about tag teams, it's synchronicity.
I want you to have
a team name. I want you to have matching outfits. I want you to do double team moves, and if you could take that
teams
to the next level and do things where you're both doing the same move at the same time in perfect synchronicity, that's driving me crazy. Plus, you got the long hair and the rock and roll lifestyle. I'm talking Sean and Marty, the Rockers.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely up there, number two on my list.
Not that fake-ass Rock and Roll Express.
Rock and Roll Express.
The Rockers.
Sort of the originators of the gimmick, sure.
No, they're not.
But, you know, prettier, you know,
Sean and Marty,
younger.
Sean and Marty were already living this lifestyle, man.
Probably better heads on their shoulders, Sean and Marty. They seemed like they just, like, had life figured out a little bit more.
Yeah, Marty was considered just a gentleman's gentleman in the game.
But once they got away from those LJN big rubber figures and moved to Hasbro, wherever they're doing, where they did that first wave of just like six-inch tall, like less rubbery, they can move a little bit more figures.
Yeah.
Like, I gotta tell you, two of the first ones I had to pick up that I was super stoked about when those things were Sean and Marty, and I had
the green and purple tights.
And I was doing a lot of matches.
Yep.
In my living room.
They had
those
like
green tight figures.
Every figure had a couple of moves. They could either do like the overhead slam.
I could move my arm up and down, or I could move my foot back a little.
Yeah, or you could do, they had like that little lever on their back.
They sure did.
And I think, I want to say.
Until you broke it. wink, 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 snap.
I want to say,
fuck.
Michael's definitely had it where he could like snap his torso down and it would make him like jump.
Oh, yeah,
and
dive. Do a little jumping thing a little bit. Yeah. Ha ha. The warrior.
Ultimate Warrior yeah, had that one too, that so one. He could do that big warrior splash.
For sure.
Yeah, that's my number one. That's my number one. Oh, boy.
Okay, we're running really long. My number one's just Demolition.
No!
I like their face paint. I like their red tongues. I liked all their studded S&M gear. I liked the way they stomped people over and over again until they were just beaten into the ground. I liked their theme song. Demolition was great. 1989, I think it was, Royal Rumble, where they came out 1 and 2, was one of the coolest things I'd ever seen. Really blew my mind.
It's gonna be a long night.
One of, you know, my favorite moments from my wrestling watching childhood. That's my number one. They were a great tag team. They're better than the Road Warriors. I don't care who came first.
You're a little older than me.
Nah, don't tell anybody.
That's all right.
Let's keep that a secret.
By the time I was watching wrestling, they had jumped the shark a bit.
They had Crush already?
I think so.
Oh, that was not the peak era.
So I was like, these guys seem kind of weird.
Mm, and they were.
Yeah.
And that's why I love them.
Yeah, but God bless you.
But not Crush. He's better. Is Kona Crush.
That was spirited.
Hawaiian hero.
Don't worry about how long this went. You're going to be able to shave like a couple minutes from that Kids Nation talk we had.
I got a good like 20 minutes out of our rambling last time.
There's plenty of shit to gut in here. So
right,
we're good.
Get through that with a sword real quick
here. We could talk Oscar picks right now. We got enough time.
We got to save something for next week.
Oh, man. Keep them wanting more. I like where your head's at,
friend. Absolutely.
Where are we next week?
Next week, we got our go-home show to the Royal Rumble. That's Primetime Wrestling from January 18th, 1988.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big deal. Then we come back the week after that. We got the Bunkhouse Stampede.
Oh.
And then we come back the week after that, and we got that Rumble Royal.
Man, that's a
called.
Big couple weeks.
Yeah, big couple weeks going. We got a couple big Battle Royal-themed events.
Quick peek behind the curtain.
On the docket.
Quick peek behind the curtain.
There's not a curtain hung anywhere.
I ask you these questions, not for the fans at home, but just so I know what to watch.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why I always have it written down.
Yeah.
I know I got to keep you on track.
Thank you.
One
it's
of
a full-time
these days,
job.
We're going to show up not having watched the same show. I know.
Oh, that's going to be our best show
it's
yet.
It's going to be the best episode yet.
I bet we'll find a way to make it through.
Oh, we're still going to record.
Yeah. I don't care. Think I care?
No, nobody cares.
Yeah, but you're going to hear it on Baby Oil and Blow.